Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
But I want to introduce you to Gail Smith right now. This is sort of big picture conversations. She is the CEO of an organization called The One. Carol, it's John Williams, or rather Gail, this is John. You're on GN. How are you this morning?
I'm good, John. How are you?
Good. Tell us what The One is.
So The One campaign is an organization that was founded by Bono of U2, and our mission is ending extreme poverty and preventable diseases. So you can imagine that in the midst of this global pandemic, we're pretty busy.
So this was in place before COVID-19 broke out, though, right?
Right, and it's an advocacy organization. We run campaigns to try to get decision makers to do the right thing. So if you imagine a campaign without politicians, and around policies and getting resources where they need to go. That's what we do. The fight against AIDS, the fight against poverty, those kinds of issues.
So you're about, and the two fronts that you folks fight on are what again?
Ending extreme poverty and preventable diseases. So if you think about HIV and AIDS, for example, that's a preventable disease, whether we're talking here in the United States or around the world. So we've worked for many years to mobilize the resources and the policies to speed up that fight because we know it's an epidemic we can end. And we're now focusing, like I think pretty much everyone in the world, on the coronavirus and the impact it's having on the world's most vulnerable.
Is that a preventable disease too?
Well, in many ways it is. I worked in the last administration and was one of the leads on the Ebola epidemic. And one of the things that we put to practice there and that we know is that if we make the right investments, there are a lot of these kinds of diseases that we can prevent, we can detect them early, and we can respond very swiftly if we put our minds to it. This one, I'm afraid, we haven't seen a fast enough response, so it's going to be harder than it might have been. But yes, there are a lot of these diseases that we certainly can keep a close eye on, viruses and other threats, and prevent them or certainly get all over them as quickly as possible.
Maybe we got to this one late, but had we acted in a uniform way sooner, who knows what the impact would have been, right?
Yeah. I mean, uniformity is really important. I mean, I know your listeners, like people all over the United States, are wandering around the guidance-wise, one state doing one thing, one doing another thing. The fact of the matter is a virus like the coronavirus doesn't need a passport. It doesn't pay any attention to borders. It moves freely, and that's why it's indeed a global pandemic. It's moved all over the world. So the more we are acting with uniformity and in concert, state to state, country to country, the better our chances of beating the virus.
What's your background? Did you work in the Obama administration on something like this?
I did. I was in the White House for 6.5 years, and then I was proud to serve as the administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development. While in the White House, we faced, as you may know, an epidemic of Ebola, which is a horrible, very, very contagious and life-threatening disease in West Africa. And what we had to do was mobilize not just all of the resources and capabilities we have in the U.S., but mobilize other leaders around the world so we could join with West Africa and other African colleagues to win the race against the virus. I mean, I think the way to think about these viruses, if they're moving faster than we are, they're winning. And so the trick is, how do you catch up with it, ultimately get ahead of it, and bring it under control? And we were able to do that in West Africa. There was a lot of loss of life and damage, but I think a lot of things that were done up front made a huge difference.
Well, we were certainly familiar with the Ebola outbreak, and it obviously didn't have the run in the United States that COVID-19 does. But maybe this is just political reporting, but I'm also hearing that the United States could have done a better job or been more prepared for the Ebola outbreak. How do you remember that?
Well, I think that there are always arguments that you can make that perhaps we should have done more early, but I do recall from the time, you know, we made a decision, President Obama did, to actually deploy U.S. forces. And that was after we had increased the number of our disaster assistance emergency teams, people we deployed to the field. We had 8, unprecedented, never happened before, and multiplied by 5 the number of CDC doctors that were on the ground. The big challenge there, and it's a challenge, quite frankly, that we're seeing here in the United States now, was logistics. So the president took the decision to actually deploy the military to help on the logistical front and get us the speed we needed to catch up with the virus.
Hmm. What was the mistake that we've made on this one?
You know, I think, and I want to be careful here, because I think one of the lessons I learned from Ebola is you got to note your mistakes, but not repeat them and keep moving. I think that we were not adequately prepared for this. There's been a lot of reporting about how much warning there was of an office we left behind, of all the other things, going back, in fact, with President Bush, that indicated that something like this could happen and we needed to be prepared. We weren't sufficiently prepared, and frankly, I think we were late in responding. The challenge now is to be prepared for the future phases of this and to up the speed so that we can essentially catch up. But I would say unprepared and late to respond. But we've got to keep going.
And I don't want to dwell on this administration's failings or victories, because I think you and I talked about this off the air, and we'd probably do everybody a favor if we just said, how do we prevent the next one, or at least minimize it? But Donald Trump but let me just, while we're here, Donald Trump's been in office for 3 years. I know he, quote unquote, yes, inherited a mess, as he says, but he's had 3 years to be in charge of a pandemic response team, et cetera. I see this administration as having failed, but frankly, it just seems to me like the whole of the federal government has failed us too. I mean, I don't know that it's going to do us any good to blame all of this on Donald Trump, because maybe it's more than Donald Trump. Can you talk about that?
Well, sure. No, I think it's a few things. And I think, look, I think there should have been awareness that something like this could happen. There are stories that came out of the weekend about President Bush's emphasis on this. President Obama was very focused on it. And people in this field of international affairs, national security, are aware that these kind of threats exist. I think the other challenge, though, and you're absolutely right on this, is there are two things that make it difficult. One, the notion that we should spend money beyond our borders is sometimes a very challenging one, particularly when people face economic hardship here at home. But it's those kinds of investments in building the capacity of countries around the world to prevent, detect, and respond to these things is a return on investment for us. It's in our own self-interest to do that. But you know, it's not always easy to make that case that we should invest outside our borders for something that may or may not happen, but we think could happen. Second, it's the same thing at home. There's always an urgency to the kinds of investments that the federal government has to make with its budget. And I think in this case, this was one where big enough investments were not made. In recent years, the budgets for these things have actually been cut, because you're playing against, again, something that might happen as opposed to all those challenges that are right in front of you. And I hope that as a country, one of the things we will recognize, I mean, this crisis in the U.S. has laid bare all sorts of challenges on the domestic economic front, internationally, that we take the lesson of this and make the investments we need so that we don't have to do this again.
Did we have a pandemic response team that we really did disband? Was that people in offices doing work to prepare us for this? And did we really disband that? And when did that all happen?
Well, what we did is we learned a lot from Ebola, but we also had Zika, H1N1, MERS. I mean, there was a steady drumbeat of viruses, coupled with the fact that the world is much more mobile now. That's why we've seen all these restrictions on travel. As people move, these viruses move with them. What we decided to do was take all of the knowledge and experience from literally hundreds of people across the federal government and experts outside, put it in one place so that there would be a team to constantly monitor. There would be a team to do things like look at an inventory, manage an inventory, have on deck the kinds of plans that are needed in case something happens, do those kinds of trial runs that you do, the sort of practice, what if something like this happens, what do we do? And also importantly, this is one of the things that these offices in the White House do, is coordinate the federal government so that we can respond very, very quickly. That office was disbanded by the current administration. And you would have to ask them why they chose to do that. I think it's unfortunate. I've served in the White House twice on the National Security Council. And that kind of coordinating mechanism that can pull the whole federal government together very quickly is really urgent. We've got it on other threats, on terrorism, on weapons of mass destruction. We believe we needed it on global health threats, and I believe we still do.
Yeah. On a phone line is Gail Smith, the CEO of the One Campaign. Bono, yeah, that Bono is the one that funded it, I guess, or is the principal funder.
Founded it. He's our principal founder. We're fortunate to have multiple funders.
So say what you want about Obama and Trump and Bush, et cetera, but how is it that the federal government of the United States is scrambling to get masks, for crying out loud? How do we not have the sufficient stores of drugs and ventilators or a scheme to move them about? Even if we disbanded this office, it just seems to me like nobody was minding the store.
Well, I wish I could be a fly on the wall and answer that question precisely. I think what we still don't have, and by the way, we don't have this nationally, we also need it globally, is a supply chain. So if you think of what's that supply chain that every consumer goods company or manufacturing company has, a regular supply of the goods and services you need to keep things running. It's a mystery to me why the federal government has not yet built an effective supply chain. I think the governors have a huge role, and the vast majority of them, I think, are demonstrating extraordinary leadership. But somebody's got to run a system so that states aren't competing with each other.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, we've got the same problem globally, because the U.S. is competing against Europe, which is competing against France, which is competing against Southeast Asia, because this is a global pandemic. So what's urgently needed, I would say it's the single most important thing right now, along with planning for the next phases, is for that supply chain. That's a job for the federal government to coordinate. The governor there can't single-handedly coordinate something like that. It's true for any other governor. Governors
have it drives the prices up, too.
The prices up. And it means that our first responders, our health workers, are not as secure as they need to be, and that nobody can really plan. Because if you don't know what you're getting, and you don't know what's on deck and when you'll get it, you've got to spend a lot of time running around and scrambling when you should be able to focus those resources and attention.
Well, Gail, then, is Jared Kushner maybe right?
Yeah.
That maybe Jared is right, that we need to let the federal government take possession of as many of these supplies as possible, and then, you know, top down decide who should get what, rather than having the individual states compete for them. What do you think? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I don't think the federal government should take control of anything. I think the federal government should coordinate. And because remember, the resources going into this, these are taxpayer dollars, right? And I served twice in government. One of the most moving things to recognize was that I was a public servant and a steward of taxpayer dollars. So what the federal government needs to do is coordinate this. It needs to be the place that knows what the national inventory is, public and private. It needs to run a coordination mechanism so it's known what is needed in all states everywhere, how you allocate according to need and the way the virus is moving. It needs to take steps with the private sector that are in a coordinated or not ad hoc fashion. And the fact of the matter is there are a lot of people who know how to do this. CEOs know how to do this. We've got officials in the military that have run effective supply chains for a long time. It's that coordination. It's not the sort of taking possession and deciding who gets what isn't the way I would describe it. I would say it's strategic coordination of assets.
Well, maybe it's too soon. Maybe it's not to say, okay, what are we going to learn from this so we don't repeat these mistakes? I guess that would be one of the things. I presume maybe coordination with other countries, too. Even though you can't trust China or Russia, it does seem like this thing's going to come back next fall. right? I mean, we're probably not done with COVID-19. Hopefully we'll have some sort of antiviral in place by then, but we really do need an international response, don't we?
We absolutely. We need an international response, I think, for two reasons. One is it's in our national and our collective self-interest to have that so that we can make sure we're sharing information, we're coordinating on the resources that are needed. And I will say, by the way, that scientists are collaborating all over the world themselves. So that's a really, really positive thing. We also need to coordinate internationally because the impact of this pandemic on the countries that are least able to withstand it is tremendous. And again, we know that none of us are safe till all of us are safe. So while we're focusing on urgent and what should be primary needs at home, we've got to keep an eye to those places where the virus can run rampant and try to help control it there. Because as you rightly say, it will just come back at us. And that's something we're very focused on. Obviously, we should all stand in solidarity with our own communities, do everything we can. I'm sure your listeners have enormous concerns there with the economic impact of this pandemic. We want to make sure that people are focused on those who are the worst affected, again, at home and abroad. It's really, really important.
And as sure as other countries are going to get it, and then we might get it again from them, so too are other states going to get it that don't have it much now. When you look at the map of the United States, by the way, it's a red map now. We used to be red states and blue states. We're all red states, and everybody has the virus. Right. And where you see the red dots is where there are people. You don't see a lot of this in Kansas and South Dakota because they don't have many people there, but as sure as we get it, they can and will get it. And sure as they get it, they can give it back to us. At least that seems to be the case to me. How do you explain, then, these governors who have been loath to institute stay-at-home orders?
I frankly don't understand it. And I'm afraid that it reflects, in large part, not listening to the science. And I think the governors who have done the best and the ones that always give me the greatest hope are those who come out to make an announcement and say, I've been listening to the advice of my scientists and medical advisors. Because one of the things about a virus is you can get actual data. You can know real facts. And those are the people who are disease detectives. I think in those states where leaders have listened to the scientists, they've made really good moves. They've moved quickly. They've been bold because these are not hard. These are not easy choices to make. Unfortunately, we've got some governors who seem to be of the view that it's not really a problem here or it'll be over by spring or by Easter. Again, politics is not the best antidote to this. It's science. And so I think, unfortunately, we've got some governors who have not been listening to the scientists. Thankfully, we've got a significant number who are.
Gail Smith is the CEO of the One Campaign. If I want to get more information or maybe give you some money to do what you do, how do I do that, Gail?
Go to one.org, and we just launched a campaign called the One World Campaign, which, again, we'll focus on standing with our communities, so we want to tell stories from everywhere we work, the United States, Europe, Canada, all over Africa. And we want to mobilize the world to realize that this is a global pandemic, and so we need a global response, and we're going to advocate to leaders to do that. All we're asking for is your voice. We're not asking for your money.
That's right, yeah.
So if you can join us, that would be terrific.
Thanks for your time, Gail. We'll visit again. Stay well, stay healthy, and stay informed. We appreciate your help on this.
Thank you. My best to you and all your listeners.
CEO of the One Campaign.